Chromosomes. Little strands of nucleic acids and proteins are the fundamental genetic instructions that tell us who we are at birth. Most people are born with 46 chromosomes, but each year in the United States, about 6,000 people are born with an extra chromosome, making them a person with Down syndrome. If you've ever encountered someone with Down syndrome, you know that they are some of the kindest, most joyful people you will ever meet. They truly have something extra. My name is Lisa Nichols, and I have spent the last 24 years as both the CEO of Technology Partners and as the mother to Allie. Allie has something extra in every sense of the word. I have been blessed to be by her side as she impacts everyone she meets. Through these two important roles as CEO and mother to Allie, I have witnessed countless life lessons that have fundamentally changed the way I look at the world. While you may not have an extra chromosome, every leader has something extra that defines who you are. Join me as I explore the something extra in leaders from all walks of life and discover how that difference in each of them has made a difference in their companies, their families, their communities, and in themselves. Today's episode was recorded live at Technology Partners, featuring a Women in Technology panel on artificial intelligence and machine learning. There's a Harvard Business Review that just came out, and they say that there's three major areas that AI can really support. The first one is the automation of business processes. The second one is better insights through data analysis, and I know we all hear about data analytics all the time, predictive analytics, that sort of thing. That's where AI can really come in and make sense of the data. We've never, ever had as much data that's being collected as we do today. I mean, there is data from all sorts of sources. But, you know, making sense of that data so you can make better decisions is really where artificial intelligence comes into play. A more streamlined customer and employee experience. And there's people on the panel that have been working on customer experience for 20 years. So I'm very excited for them to tell you how AI is really enhancing the customer experience as well as the employee experience. But this is where the magic of AI happens, and that's what we're going to dive into. But before we do, did everyone get a program? Okay, so on the back of this, you'll have a bio of all of our esteemed panelists. Did you get a
program?
There you go. Thank you, Kimberly. Thank you very much, Vanna. And so make sure you read through their bios, but instead of just rehashing, you know, their bios for you, what I really wanted to do is to take a couple minutes to talk about how they got from there to here. Because there may be some people, even today, maybe in our listening audience with the live streaming or on the podcast or our live audience here, that may be saying, you know what, data analytics, that sounds so exciting to me, but how would you even go about moving toward that? So I asked them each just to take just a couple minutes and just tell you about their journey. And what I think you'll find is none of them started out thinking, oh, this is what I'm going to do. But, you know, they have taken those opportunities to prepare themselves. And so that's why they are where they are today. So, Charles, I hate to call on you first, but I'm going to.
We're going to alphabetical order.
Yes, alphabetical order. There you go.
Oh, great. Well, my name is Charles A., and I really appreciate being invited today, especially with such an esteemed panel. I would like to say that I didn't start off in the technology space, and you know, much like the accidental tourist, I'm the accidental technologist. So I actually started off in marketing, and as a kid, had no idea what I wanted to do, which is, I think, not too unusual for a lot of college students. But I did have a passion for customer experience. So I really started in the customer experience space, you know, a number of years ago. And in fact, I work for a company that is based in Kansas City. And we really helped define, you know, voice of the customer, enterprise feedback management. And when I started with that company, everything was voice. There's a lot of data we were collecting, but we were doing a lot of paper reporting. So imagine, you know, paper reporting, color coded. In fact, when we got color printers, that was just the bomb. It was amazing. This is back when laser printers were like, you know, $7,000. But what we didn't realize along the way is just how much data that we were collecting and what an important role that, you know, big data was going to play in, you know, helping to understand, you know, customers, customer behaviors. And I think, you know, what's evolved even really since, you know, sort of big data has been understanding what to do with all that big data. And I think that's where, you know, AI, and I think where we're going to learn from the panel today, you know, comes into play. But I actually, again, started in the customer experience space, and I started measuring the customer experience and guest experience. And about 5 years ago, was invited to interview with Smart Action. And instead of, you know, measuring the guest experience, actually now I am a part of a company that actually helps to deliver a great customer experience. You know, so what we do is actually virtualize customer agents. So a lot of the you know, repetitive tasks that agents would normally do in contact care centers, we actually automate that using AI. So have gone from measuring the guest experience or the customer experience to actually providing that experience, and it's pretty exciting. So look forward to sharing many of those stories with you today.
Good, thank you.
Sure.
Julie?
So on paper, my path kind of looks like it makes a lot of sense. In the moment, it seemed like split decision making or like just a split time decision. So in college, I majored in economics with a minor in computer science. So I took my first computer science course in college, and I thought it was great. It was fun. It was very challenging. But, you know, my interest was still on the business side at that point. And then through one of my classes, I had the chance to, as a final project, consult eBay on its Eastern Europe strategy and expansion there as part of a school final project. And so that's how I learned about what eBay was doing and also learned about the world of product management. So right after school, I had the opportunity to work as a product manager at eBay, where I was for 2 years. And so I was on the selling side. So if you've ever tried to sell something on eBay, whether that was on your computer or listing an item on your phone, that was the experience I was the product manager of during my 2 years there. So I had a really great time at eBay. I learned a lot. One thing that I noticed as a trend in product management was that data-driven decision-making was starting to become a more and more valued skill in product management. And I found that, you know, this is a part that I was really interested in, but I wasn't able to spend as much time as I'd liked during my day job on really strengthening that part of my skill set. After about 2 years, I was like, you know, I'm really interested in machine learning and being better at data analytics. I took some courses outside of work, and then the opportunity at Jane.ai kind of appeared while I was doing a job search for a smaller company, and an opportunity where I could be part of a project that involved machine learning. And so this data analyst job at Jane.ai came up. I applied, and in the last 6 months, I've been able to really strengthen my skill set, especially, you know, getting hands-on experience with machine learning. And from there, you know, they were like, you know, why not become a full-time data scientist and really work on the machine learning ensemble? So I think that's a really exciting part of my job, even though I didn't start out thinking this is where it went. You know, as you uncover your interests and as I uncovered what I thought was really fun and challenging part of my job, you know, that's kind of where I directed myself toward.
Thank you. Thanks, Julie, for sharing your story. Kimberly?
So, hi. So my name's Kim Simon. I work at MasterCard, and I've been in the industry for many years. We're not going to talk about how many. but, I mean, I started out math computer science major, born and raised here in St. Louis, Missouri for my entire life. And I started out as a developer. In fact, I actually worked here at Tech Partners.
Yes,
so I feel like
did.
I'm coming home.
I know. Yeah. And your husband, too.
And my husband actually was placed through Tech Partners. So they do an amazing job of at identifying talent.
I'll pay
good endorsement
later.
There.
Good endorsement. But anyway, so no, I started out as a developer. My background is developer DBA. So I kind of brought that to the industry. When I started at MasterCard, which was about 12 years ago, I started in a role where I knew nothing about the technology. I was forced to become a manager. And it really helped me separate being a leader versus being a technologist. And I enjoyed it. I loved it. I had a passion for leading and motivating people. And I also brought my experience of the data side and kind of the technology side to help make those decisions. So when we talk about data decisioning, that's kind of how I bridge that gap. So fast forward a few years, one of the career moments, kind of the key moment, was Apple Pay. So if everybody is familiar with Apple Pay, hopefully, that was kind of, I was part of that project. I felt very honored to be part of that project. And I actually joined, when I was at MasterCard, I was on the business side, which was a brand new world for me. And I learned as Julie was saying, from a business perspective, from a product perspective. So it was my first time looking at things from a customer lens. I spent a lot of time at the Apple headquarters doing the integration components. And wow, I mean, my eyes just got huge. Learning the possibilities, what can the data do for us? It opened up a whole new arena. after that, and I'm in my current role, where I lead business operations. So I lead business operations for the processing division. And we use AI to help make our decisions. We have tons of data at MasterCard, plentiful data. We don't know what to do with it all. We have so much data. How do we make smart decisions based upon the data that we have? That's a challenge that we still struggle with, not going to lie. I mean, we still, what's going to take us to that next stage in our advancement as a company? And I feel kind of privileged to be part of that. And it's a culture change. We have the tools, we have the technology. It's not, it's a culture, it's a mindset. And one of the things that I kind of bring to the table is I've got both sides now. I've got the product side, which Julie was kind of mentioning, and I've also come from a very data-driven background, just being a math major. That's how I think.
Great combination. Ed?
Thanks, Lisa and Lori, for putting this together. What a great event. Yeah, my name's Ed Corno, and I'm a chief technology leader, which basically is a chief technologist for IBM. And my background is unique and different. I think it all starts with your own personality, your drive, what you want to do with your life, what kind of curiosity you have, where you want to go with it. Do you want to be in a situation where it's kind of mundane or average? Where do you want to take your career? These are all questions you have to ask yourself, because it first starts with you and how you want to go about changing your life, or how do you really want to develop your career. Because that's what I did through my 25-plus years of experience. I saw personally that the internet was going to be huge, was going to be gigantic. And my education was BA from Washington University in St. Louis, and then a master's degree from Webster University. And I started dabbling with the internet when I was working at Nestle Purina. Back then it was Ralston Purina. And they came to me and said, hey, there's this thing called the internet. This was back in like 1992.
I remember that.
Yeah. Before Google, before Amazon, before all these huge companies in the internet space, and said, what can we do with this? It's going to be a fad. It's not going to go anywhere. I raised my hand and said, out of curiosity, I'll take it on. So then they gave me a team of developers. I started managing it. I got into the web space side of it. And I said, I'm really intrigued with the rest of this. What's behind all this? The middleware, the data, all that makes it an incredible experience for us. And I had the vision, luckily and fortunately, to say, this is going to be gigantic. And I jumped on it, and my career kind of took off. I went from Ralston Purina then to Capgemini Ernst & Young as a principal in emerging technologies, because I have a passion for emerging technologies. I love the fact that I can get up every day and say, this is going to be unique. This is going to be a different day. I'm not going to go in and do the same thing over and over and over again. And I went from that role into EDS, and a lot of people don't know what EDS is, but it's Ross Perot's old company. He ran for president. And I was working with senior managers down there to develop all sorts of new technologies in the internet space. As a matter of fact, I was one of the co-founders of their cloud activity back then, almost 15 years ago. And when I did that, I realized what a great experience. Well, HP came along and bought EDS.
Well, hold on. Cloud is not new?
Yeah, it's not new. Well, I have more earth-shaking news, too, about AI.
Yes.
I'll get to that in a bit.
Oh, AI? Is that new?
Yeah, not really. And so basically, HP bought us, and I continued on in my role, and now I'm with IBM 3 years plus, and we're the leader in AI. We're doing tremendous things. Google is trying to catch up, and we'll talk more about that.
Yeah, okay, sounds good. Well, thank you. Yep. You know, I heard something, Ed, from what you were talking about, and I hear this all the time. There's a common thread. You know, sometimes, you know, it's those projects that nobody else wants. And if you raise your hand and say, I'll take that on. Yes, what's that? Right, exactly. But look what happened with Ed. People are like going, you know.
You make it for yourself, girl. You go.
That's right.
You make it. But you make it better.
And sometimes, I mean, Ed, you know, has this curiosity and has obviously a passion, right,
Definitely.
For technology. But sometimes it feels uncomfortable. But, you know, raising your hand and saying, you know what, I'll take that on. I mean, I cannot even tell you. Brian is executive producer of our podcast. We've had so many people on our podcast, and that is a common theme. You know, it's like take those projects that nobody else wants. You know, and make it happen, you know. So anyway,
exactly.
Thank you guys. I love like hearing your stories. So, and we've already kind of talked about this a little bit, but I want to talk about the magic of AI. All right, I want to talk about the magic. So, you know, you guys have all talked about it a little bit. You know, Kim, you're in fintech. You know, you're in the customer experience. I mean, let's just start, Charles. Let's start with you. And, you know, Ed, I mean, if you could talk about what IBM's doing with healthcare. MD Anderson is doing awesome things right now with artificial intelligence. So let's just start with you, Charles, and let's talk about some success stories.
Sure. Well, there's a lot of success stories, luckily.
I know. You're going to have to narrow it down.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's kind of interesting is, you know, AI obviously is getting a lot of press. And people are on different ends of the continuum of the spectrum, sort of what's this mean for us? What's it mean for humanity? No, we're not going to talk about humanity today, but there are some, you know, some bigger questions regard to AI. But what's kind of interesting, though, is just how it's really filtered into our own daily lives. I mean, so the magic of AI is, you know, when you use your phone and you order Uber, that's all AI that's happening in the background. For those of you that are, if you're Delta Airlines, right? So instead of the old days, right, you have to call in, identify who you are, what you're doing, you know, what you want to get accomplished. If you didn't have to go to a counter, I mean, when's the last time you actually saw an agent? You know, you just don't have those types of interactions anymore. And the reason is because of what's happening in the background, you know, with AI. So, you know, we kind of take that for granted, this sort of evolution or revolution, I guess, in some regards, on, you know, just how much it's really impacted our daily lives. So sometimes when we think about AI, we're thinking IBM Watson, right? We're thinking, you know, robots and computers and those types of things. Well, you know, AI is really all about automating processes, right? Taking data, automating processes, and having an impact on your customer experience. You know, so a good example is the Delta Airlines experience, you know, where, you know, they are being proactive and they're calling you, right, or texting you or whatever mode of communication that you want to be communicated to, maybe your mobile app, and informing you and making your lives just a little bit easier. One of the things that we like to do as a company, we went through a big branding exercise, is really try to make life less hard. Life's not easy. There is no easy button, right? But it really is all about making life just a little bit less hard, trying to give more time back in the day to you so you can go to, you know, softball and so you can, you take your kids to soccer and, you know, go on vacation. Those types of things only occur when processes are automated and technology gives you back some time. And more importantly, can predict, right? Can, you know, use data and predict sort of what your next action might be. So if you're calling in, let's say, to Delta Airlines, and it knows that, you know, you've had a flight and that flight's delayed, there's a high likelihood you're calling in because your flight's been delayed. So why make you go through that process? Why not just go ahead and solve it and say, hey, your flight was delayed. We've already booked you on that next flight. Does this option still work for you? So those are a couple of examples, I think, of where, you know, the magic of AI really does work well. And I think we're only going to see, you know, big, huge enhancements of that, and, you know, even more as we move forward.
Right. Sky's the limit.
Indeed.
Really. It really is. Julie, do you have a success story? Tell a little bit about what Jane is doing,
sure.
And you can talk about USA Mortgage, whatever you want to talk about.
Yeah, so I think what makes me really excited to work in this space is, one, the customer success stories that we see at Jane.ai, and then also just what I learned from the larger AI community. So first I'll start with Jane. I think it's great to see the immediate positive impact that a lot of customers can see when they implement Jane.ai. So for those of you who don't know, Jane.ai, we build a chatbot that companies can integrate into, could be their web page or their HR systems. We connect to a lot of different applications, and then people can ask Jane questions that is stored in a knowledge base. And so one of the great success stories is USA Mortgage, like Lisa mentioned. So loan officers at USA Mortgage ask Jane for details about the loans that they're handling. And whereas in the past, they would have to take out their computer, often after hours, and then log in into the system and then check all the loans. And instead, they can answer their customer questions right from their phone. So, you know, I was at an HR event recruiting for Jane.ai when someone from USA Mortgage came up to me and was just like, you know, we love Jane.ai. It saves our loan officers so much time. There's an anecdote that David has told before. David is my CEO, has told before about a loan officer who was golfing with one of his clients, and the client was like, oh, it was asked a question about the loan, like, what was the closing rate or, you know, what's the status? And in the past, he would have had to have been like, oh, I'll get back to you later. But instead, he was like, how about I check on my phone with Jane? And, you know, she gave the answer, and he was able to provide great customer service because of that. Another one is Framecat in New Zealand. They're in the steel industry, but they put Jane.ai on their website. And through that, day one, they started to generate new leads because of it. People were able to find how to contact Framecad, and because of that, they were able to kind of source new leads and deals. And I was also recently at the Prepare AI conference. I don't know if some of you were there as well. But I just thought, like, that was so, so cool, because that's, like, where you see so many examples of the magic of AI. One of my favorite talks was the AI for Earth from someone at Microsoft. And so just all the applications that artificial intelligence and machine learning algorithms can be applied to. One of my favorites was Project Premonition, which is, you know, they build better mosquito traps based on all these different factors, and it learns, like, which features can be used to distinguish different breeds of mosquitoes. So if scientists are trying to study the Zika virus and they only want to collect mosquitoes that carry the Zika virus, then they're building these mosquito traps, and then from the data that's gathered from those traps, they build better algorithms to make those traps even better. You know, detect new pathogens.
Mm-hmm. So, I see a new book here instead of a better mousetrap and mosquito trap. That's awesome.
Yeah, so, I mean, just all the applications and industries that AI can be applied is kind of what makes me super excited to be in this industry.
Very exciting. Mm-hmm. Kim? We don't have
mosquito traps, but I mean, I think you just heard a bunch of examples of kind of the sexiness, right, that AI provides. From a MasterCard perspective, we approach it more from a protection and a security standpoint. So we kind of have a little different flavor of that. So I'll maybe turn the table here a little. How do we protect the cardholder from fraudsters? I mean, that's kind of one of our big things. I mean, why do you choose MasterCard over Visa? Obviously, everybody here chooses MasterCard over Visa. But I mean, the things that we do to set apart our brand is, how do we protect the cardholder? And how can we leverage AI into doing that? Fraudsters are getting smarter. They're getting faster. How do we respond to that quicker? It's no longer do we live in a days where we can put 1,000 people on it. Now we live in a day of, how do we make the data work for us based upon trending patterns? So how do we leverage that big data and make it meaningful, and make it meaningful from a cardholder perspective, so that we actually protect our cardholders? So, I mean, that's probably the flip side. That's kind of the practical side. And on the technology side, we do a lot in monitoring. From a monitoring perspective, how do we get smarter? Because so I'm in the processing division at MasterCard. So we work with a lot of our bank partners, like, for example, Wells Fargo, USAA, a lot of big name brands, that they trust MasterCard as their processor. We have to make sure that we're monitoring things, making sure that things are expedient, make sure that we're aware of things before they are, which is a challenge these days. It plays into communication. It plays into voice of a customer. We have to be smarter, faster, quicker. How do we respond to outages? You know, no longer do we live in a days that we can wait 15 minutes for everybody to join a call. We have to return service immediately, because we have cardholders out there trying to spend money to send their kids to school, or to they have a healthcare issue and they need medicine, or they need attention. We can't say, oh, excuse me, you have to wait 15 minutes. They want their cards to work now. So we have to use data and use those data-driven decisions. How do we automatically restart that server based upon this criteria? So those are things that we're exploring, looking into. I'm not going to say we're experts by any means, but we're learning, and it's a culture shift. Well, we do have IBM for that. Thank you.
We'll plug
that. Yeah. I was going to mention that at some point, but thank you. So that's ways that we're using AI within MasterCard.
Thanks, Kim. Ed?
Well, let's kind of start at the beginning.
Oh,
really?
No.
Sorry.
Start at the very beginning.
Anybody know Alan Turing? Have you ever heard the name Alan Turing?
Sure,
okay, he's kind of like the founder of computing, the Enigma code from the Nazis, and there's a movie about it. Church Turing thesis says, a machine's intelligent if a human being can't tell the difference between the machine and a human being. So that happened in 1943. Okay, 1956, fast forward. Your parents probably do. Fast forward to 1956, there was a conference at Dartmouth College, and there was Arthur Simon there, who was one of the founders of AI. There was four individuals.
Ooh, was
John
I
McCarthy.
Related to him?
You might be.
Huh.
Mm-hmm. John McCarthy was there as well. Marvin Minsky, and they figured out, we need to take these machines and make them smarter, because it'll make humanity better. And we need to work together. And there's always that fear of, okay, AI is going to be like a Terminator and take over everything. But there are safeguards in place, I reassure you. From our perspective, we're going to the next level of AI, where there's an actual conversation, much like 2001: A Space Odyssey with HAL. where you can talk back and forth. The answers come naturally. We have this thing called natural language processing, which allows us to do that. It's similar to a lot of AI that's out there. You're probably familiar with Alexa and Echo Dot. By the way, Echo Dot is listening to your conversations. Hate to say that. That's from Amazon. Be careful with that. So, I mean, that's one of the things you have to watch out for. From a kind of use case perspective, I personally worked on what we call machine learning. There's a difference between machine learning and artificial intelligence in our vernacular. Machine learning is what some of the examples we were talking about, where you go out on a mobile phone, you tap in some things, and information comes back up. So that's really more a sophisticated data query that's going on. And that's a search engine behind that that's giving you that information. Okay, our next level is going to be far beyond that. We're currently working with MIT on, and it's going to be amazing for everybody. You're going to have beyond that virtual assistant we're talking about. And the one thing that we're seeing, too, is that with these companies we're dealing with, there's two areas. One is customer relations, because contact centers need help in funneling all these information and questions to them. And then medicine. We started out with that. We've been working on it for 15 years. It's called Watson Health. And Watson Health is driving decision-making for doctors and medical professionals, and especially focusing on cancer and trying to cure cancer with Watson Health. It's a long road. It's not easy. And for doctors to figure out your own personal treatment, that's what we want, personalized treatment for your illness. We're striving for that. But there's other areas that we're looking at that are beyond what we're thinking about right now. In space, we're looking at AI and how it can help us define where the planets are, where the different type of stars are located. Across the board, every different industry is going to be impacted by this. So you have to think about, when you say AI, what is really AI and what is machine learning? We personally are seeing right now a lot of machine learning activity going on. And that really accelerated in 2015.
Yeah, thank you, Ed. Sure. Jenny Ramotti is your CEO, and she uses the media, Watson Media, all the time when they do town halls. You know, they receive, get this, so IBM receives over 8,000 resumes a day, making it the number one on job search site Glassdoor for Gen Z applicants. You know, but here is what Jenny says. This is a quote from her. She said, "That's not the only way that the technology giant, which employs roughly 350,000 workers, knows who in the workforce is currently searching for a new position. IBM artificial intelligence technology is now 95% accurate in predicting workers who are planning to leave their jobs." So they are using artificial intelligence even to look at what their possible attrition. And we all know, I mean, workforce, you know, strategies is the buzz right now, right? I mean, the labor market is tighter than we have ever seen it in our world anyway, right, Michelle? IT people, I mean, it is. And so, you know, you want to make sure that you're not just attracting people, but that you are setting up an environment and a culture where people are going to want to stay and retain those people, right? So, I mean, they're using with 95% accuracy, they are being able to predict their attrition. So, I mean, the sky, when I say the sky is the limit, it truly really is in what artificial intelligence can be used for. Let's face it, the future is mobile. There's a good chance that you are listening to this show right now on your phone. Have you explored how you can move your business mobile too? Our mobile apps team at Technology Partners makes it their mission to move our clients into the hands of their employees and customers and change their business processes to meet the demands of their users. Let's work together and build a dynamic mobile app for your team. Go to tpi.co/mobile apps and get the conversation started about how we can help you get your new application off the ground. But I want to talk about the myths around AI, because there are a lot of myths. And Ed, you kind of alluded to it, but you know, something we hear out there is, well, AI's on the horizon, but we're really not there yet. Is that true? Is that a myth?
I think
debunk the myth.
No, I think that is false in one way, but true in another. These are incremental type advancements in development, especially in AI. And you can see it when you use it. And it really applies to the mobile phone example really well, because you're out there searching, up comes your information quickly. So that part is true, but that vision that we have at IBM as really being like that artificial person next to you, helping you with your life, in all phases of it. That we're still working on. We're not there yet. We're trying to get there as soon as we can.
Right. I think there's also a perception out there that AI is how it's Terminator, as you mentioned.
Yes. Right.
But that's really kind of, and I don't, you could probably go deeper than I can in this area, but that's more like AGI, right? There's artificial intelligence, which is really, you know, automating, you know, data, business processes, mm-hmm. and outcomes, you know, to help humans, you know, do their jobs better. AGI is artificial general intelligence. So that's that whole other space of having machines emulate more of the emotions and things like that from of a human perspective. To Ed's point, we're a long way away from that, you know, if ever, and there are going to be a lot of controls in place. So I think it's interesting is, you know, if you were to query people on sort of what AI is, it's amazing the spectrum.
Oh, it's unbelievable.
Yeah, but at the end of the day, I think you're absolutely right. It really is just how do we manage these massive amounts of data in a way that's uniform, in a way that's predictable, and that can be then melted down into useful ways. Well, I've been in this business for a number of years, and when I started with Smart Action about 5 years ago, I literally went to our marketing department, and I said, I can't sell this AI stuff. I mean, it's scaring everybody. It's just, it's just scaring them. So I said, you got to get rid of the AI piece of that. You know, we're natural language, we're, you know, everything, you know, automated speech recognition. I said, you got to get rid of it. And then IBM actually came out. I don't know if you remember that. I think it was in 2015. It was a CBS 60 Minutes report. And it talked about, to your point about the medical side of that, I mean, if you're trying to get personalized care for your particular condition, and you're relying on your doctor to read thousands and thousands and thousands of medical journals, you know, it's a hit or miss, right? But because of, it was because of that episode, I'm not kidding you, I saw the adoption of people's willingness to allow AI and understand sort of what it really means to them on a very personal level. So I went back to the marketing department, you know, of course, about 6 months later, and I'm like, you gotta get this AI back. And I'm like, you told us to take it out of everything.
Thanks for the recognition, by the way.
That's true, though. It's totally true.
I think part of it's a culture change. I mean, I think all of us are being asked to do more with less, right?
Definitely.
So, and I think just out of that forced necessity, we're having to find ways to improve our processes. How do we become more efficient? How do we become better? I mean, there is no magic wand. And I mean, I know all of us have the pressures of society. We have the pressures of our management. We have the pressures of the industry. And I mean, having to do more with less. And we are forced to some extent to automate these processes just to be able to do our jobs. There is no big magic button. I wish there was. But we're on a
Millennials
journey.
Millennials are looking for that magic button.
I know they are.
Yeah, I think machine learning is far more incremental than people often think it is, especially at large companies. Sometimes you get business leader who's like, all right, let's do this AI thing. Like, I want to make a transformation.
Right.
But, you know, it's far more incremental and more of a phased approach. And it can take a really long time. Like, I've certainly read a lot of articles about IBM, you know, consulting various companies and implementing their algorithms. And it takes a long time because I'll take one example. When I was working at eBay, we were working on image search. The idea was that if you were shopping for something, but you didn't quite know how to describe it, you take a photo, something similar to it, or you take a photo of what you want to buy. It's on your phone, and then it comes up with similar results. And there's a lot of pre-trained models out there, but and maybe that could see 50% of the way there, but it wasn't enough to make the algorithm good enough to satisfy customers. And so it requires a lot of, you know, researchers labeling the data of all the images in eBay and then, you know, really customizing it. And then also making sure that your user experience is set up so that you can gather feedback about what's correct and what's not. And then to continue training your algorithm. Sometimes that can take years, you know, to make your data available and ready to consume and for your data to be labeled correctly. And so it's not as quick as business leaders often think it is. Obviously, with some applications such as Jane.ai, you know, it's the chatbot algorithm has already been developed. You can kind of plug and play and just take, you know, a few months to get the data ready. Shorter if the company has already had the data ready in a consumable format. But for companies that are thinking more long-term and trying to do more things in-house, I think it just...
The process.
The strategy is much more phased and incremental than people expect it to be.
Well, you guys have already kind of answered this question, but I mean, a lot of the fear out there is that, oh my gosh, AI, you know, RPA, these things are going to replace the human being. You know, what do you guys say about that?
Well, I think your machine learning, you know, example is kind of interesting because we've seen with machine learning, you know, when it runs amok. I mean, I think we saw it with the Microsoft example a couple of years ago, right? It takes humans to train the models. It takes humans to take a look at the output from that machine learning and to make decisions, you know, based on that. So I think it's just going to, it's not going to automatically do these things. I think it will do some of the, you know, the downstream, so the actual tasks, some of them it will actually perform. We just have to retrain our labor force, right? Retrain the way people think and work with machines. So having that right mix of humans plus machines, I think is going to be, that's going to be the calibration. So jobs aren't going to go away, but the different types of jobs and the way that we approach our work is certainly going to change, you know, quite a bit.
Right.
And one thing to keep in mind is automation sometimes just helps you screw up faster.
That's a good point of view.
That's a good point of view.
I like that. That's true.
I'm the downside of this.
Yeah, especially when it's all starting out, it's relatively brand new.
Exactly.
I can definitely see that happen. But from our perspective, we want AI to be your assistant. We're in control. We're going to make sure that it does what it needs to do, build models that are appropriate for whatever task it is. It's going to be incremental. So as we see that evolve and keep changing, we're going to adapt as well. And as far as like jobs, there's a threat to that for certain skill levels. But as we always say, if you're in an organization, you have certain individuals that maybe have potential, you take them and make them do higher value type tasks. And that's where we see the future.
Right.
Yeah, but it's also powered, you know, entire economies. I mean, take a look at, because of AI, it's actually created a lot of jobs. Think Uber. I mean, I would love to have been an Uber driver, you know, 18, 19, you know, 20 years old. You know, you're in control of your own schedule. Can you imagine? It'd be awesome. You know, I want to take off an hour or two. So it's provided, I think, a lot of benefits to sort of how we work. I think we're going to see a lot of change in the economy, even at a professional level. You know, our biggest commodity is our time. And I think, mm-hmm. it'd be, you know, that's what we're selling to our company. And, you know,
that's what you can't make more of.
That's exactly right.
You can never make more time.
Yep.
Right.
Yep.
Well, what about this? So, you know, an organization or somebody even out here may be thinking, you know, I don't think our organization, that would be overkill for us to have a strategy. What do you guys say about that?
I think that's totally wrong, because I think you really need to start there. And what we try to do in our process is called design thinking. And I don't know if everyone's familiar with design thinking or not, but that's a great process. I think it's the best process ever to kind of solve a complex problem. We start there and then build it out, because even if you think, okay, my organization is too small or can't handle AI, you can start with the machine learning part of it. And we allow you to do what it's called Watson Studio, go online for free for 30 days and build out some models and see if this is really going to work for you. You'd be amazed at how you can really apply it to your organization. You'll do things that you didn't think you could do, and it'll be within your budget and target for it. And that's what we look at it. I mean, we look at exactly where it's going, how it could apply to your business, but then also exactly what's going to happen in, say, 5 years or 10 years. And your point, Charles, about being concerned about where AI is going and humanity and jobs, there's an organization called OpenAI that Elon Musk started, and he's kind of driving some regulation around that so that we do have control over it. I mean, think of nuclear power in World War II after that came about. We have nuclear commissions for it. So you're starting to see countries and organizations, even the UN, looking at ways to control it.
Within business operations, it's very task-driven, right? And so what we did a couple years ago is we had a transformation leader, which is who I report to and feel very lucky to have her a part of MasterCard. Her name's Kim Martin. She's really the definition of how do we transform an organization from a task-driven, very task, you know, here's my five procedures, I do them every day, to how do we really adopt the whole SRE mindset, the site reliability engineering mindset. So we take somebody that's used to punching keys on a keyboard every day, and now we label them a site reliability engineer. And they're like, whoa, my job just changed. Now what do I do? It's a culture shift. And what she really strives and drives into each of us is when you wake up in the morning, what can you make better that day about the job you're doing? And that mindset I've seen over the past year and a half really shift. People have ideas, things that you wouldn't think about. And they're like, wow. And then we're seeing them come to implementation. So the message I'm trying to send here is you can make your own difference no matter what job, what position you're in, just by waking up that morning and say, what am I going to do today that's going to make a difference? Chances are it's going to include automation. Chances are it's going to include data-driven decisioning and also AI. So, I mean, that's the evolution of a culture.
Yeah, and to go off of that, because we've talked about so many applications of AI in a wide range of industries and applications, you know, I think that what will really distinguish businesses in the future is if their leaders can think creatively about the applications of artificial intelligence and machine learning. And that doesn't require you to be a data scientist or an AI researcher. It's more about, you know, having some understanding of the mechanisms and then being able to suggest solutions that fit within, you know, the realities of where the research is at, and maybe even push the research in a direction that will help with the application of those technologies.
And I think the must of it is, you know, your competitors are going to be doing it. So unless you dominate your industry and you don't expect any entrance, you know, as a competitor, you'd better be thinking about these things. And what's kind of interesting as well is over the years, computing is cheap. I mean, it really is. I mean, computing has gotten extremely inexpensive, which is why it's so widely available, you know, generally. You know, so I think part of what we encourage our customers to do is to take a stance, go after one of the projects, right? You don't have to boil the ocean, you know. So, you know, our CEO often says, you know, how do you eat an elephant? You know, one bite at a time. And I think, you know, part of that mantra is, you know, making sure that you fail fast. You know, so if you are, you know, a nimble, agile, you know, organization, to find a low-hanging fruit, to find some area where you can get started, just get started, right? Kind of jump right on in there. Make sure you have clearly defined goals and outcomes. But even if you make a mistake, it's not quite like it was years ago, where you had to actually go out and buy servers and put in the air conditioning for the servers, a lot of infrastructure, you know. So I think just the mentality of how we think, and in fact, you know, people in the Gen Z generation that you've just discussed, they are going to have tools available to them that we couldn't even imagine, you know, as young adults.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much, because we were moving into the must and the strategy. What I heard you say, Charles, is don't boil the ocean. And Julie, to your point, it's just like starting to think about what are the applications, how could we use this, and start small. Right? I mean, start with that low-hanging fruit, but everybody needs to be thinking about it because I guarantee you your competition is thinking about it. So it is really necessary for us to come up with some sort of AI strategy. So we've already kind of discussed this just a little bit, but I want you guys just to talk real briefly, and then we're going to do a little Q&A. Things are going to change. Jobs are going to change. I mean, we hear all the time there are jobs that are going to be in the future that we don't even understand what they're going to be yet, right? But for the workforce, things are going to change. AI is here to stay. So what can the workforce do to prepare themselves for these changes that are coming? What would you guys say to that?
For me, for what I'm seeing within our workforce, what we're trying to do is you've got to get your people trained up on these new technologies, especially AI, and how these models can help them proceed with what they're really doing, whatever role they're in. If you don't do that, you're going to be left behind. So that's number one, you got to train. Number two is, you really get the employees engaged in how it's going to benefit them from a career standpoint, because there's always a lag. These technologies come out. And remember, technologies are there to help solve business problems from our perspective. We're talking about business issues, business to business. Now, business to consumer is a little bit different. But from what we see, it's really about that. It's really about taking that role, whatever they're in, and enhancing that role using technologies, combined with solving that problem that you alluded to is, right, what is it? We don't want to take technology and just come up with technology type solutions. We want to make sure it really focuses on whatever that business problem is.
Right. So what I heard you just say is problem solving skills.
Exactly.
And consultancy, right?
Yeah, training,
I mean, moving from the order taker more to the consultative mindset. It's all,
exactly.
A lot of it's about mindset,
it really
right?
Is.
So Kim, what would you say to that?
I'm going
to
approach it more from a, you need new thinking. You need new blood. When you go to hire people, don't hire people like you. You need, I call it the witch's brew. The best teams that I've seen work is people that come from different backgrounds that offer something unique and individual, because that's where the innovation happens. That's where the training, the cross-training, and that's how you advance an organization. If you keep hiring like people, you're going to be stuck in the same mindset.
Great point.
And to build on
yeah.
what you're saying, that's what design thinking does as
yep.
a methodology. It brings in people from different disciplines within an organization to solve a problem. And the more diverse it is, the more beneficial it's going to be for your company.
Yeah, I love what you just said about building more diverse teams, or at mm-hmm. least, you know, whether it's mindset or background.
Oh.
Because, you know, one point I wanted to bring up is that a must for organizations is to make sure that your application of artificial intelligence helps build teams like that, or helps build results that are fair. And so, you know, a really hot topic that people like to talk about, and we've seen in the news, which is a real problem, is bias. And there's two types. One is algorithmic bias, and the second is bias in the usage of these algorithms. And so as we're implementing more artificial intelligence, machine learning algorithms, we really have to understand where the pitfalls are. And so with algorithmic bias, one common example is if your training data is not representative of your customers or who you're trying to evaluate, it's not going to work well. There have been studies about how facial recognition algorithms do better on one subset, especially particularly white males, and they're more accurate in identifying individuals.
We're more plain, that's why.
Versus African American, Black, or Asian. Yeah, so, and you know, it's because like the training set is built off of those examples, and those that's what the label data examples are when they were training the algorithm. And so when police departments like NYPD or SFPD uses it to identify suspects, like you take a photo and then you try like out of a line of individuals supposed to pick the right person, it's like 5 to 10% worse on African Americans. So you could be in a situation where you're overusing the algorithm on the people that it underperforms for the most. And that was like back in 2012. But even in 2018, a study from the MIT Media Lab came out where the error rate for identifying gender of any other ethnicity that was not white male was like 20 to 30% error rate, whereas for white males, it was less than 1% in identifying African gender, which is just
shocking. I need to live a cleaner life now.
I mean, you bring up a really great topic of bias, because that's one of the keys we're trying to work on, too, with AI, is figuring out exactly how to make that better. Because as you start building out these models, algorithms, you've got to look at exactly how these things can impact decisions. And if you have bad data, you're going to get bad decisions.
Right. Garbage in, garbage out.
Yes.
And then the second one I really wanted to bring up, which there are news articles about, you know, IBM, I believe, has a facial recognition algorithm that can identify someone's ethnicity and gender, et cetera, and those put in the wrong hands can be used to single out or screen out, especially in an HR scenario, applicants. And so, you know, like if we are putting an algorithm in the hands of other people because we're a third party, you know, it's also our responsibility to make sure that it's being used fairly.
Great points. Charles, do you have anything to add?
Not a lot, because I'm not an HR expert, but I can tell you that, you know, you mentioned earlier being able to predict attrition within an organization. Well, you can use that same skill to identify the right people that you want to work for your company. So a lot of what we do is, you know, hire for profile. So it's not profile, you know, we try not to bias it from some of the social stuff, but really for behaviors. And a lot of what we look for, probably the number one thing we look for, is curiosity. Mm-hmm. You know, so as you think about sort of the way Southwest Airlines has hired over the years, in fact, you know, the interview has nothing to do about whether or not you can do the job. It's what do you do when you're in a stressed situation, and do you exhibit good customer behavior skills? So I think it's really important to understand sort of who you are as a company culturally, and to make sure you put together a good mix of people, and technology can actually help with that. And part of what we went through a whole personality assessment. It was really interesting. It wasn't so much about yours, but it was understanding the other people's assessment, right? So that's where it's been fascinating. Yeah. So to understand, you know, what drives them, what motivates them, if there is a conflict or if you want to be persuasive, what are the triggers? What are the things that you need to exhibit or to do in order to be successful with that team?
Mm-hmm. Definitely can improve communication.
Indeed.
When you understand people. All right, very good. Well, you know what? We are right at 9:30, but I do want to open it up for just a couple of questions. If anybody has a question for the panel. Yes?
When you're preparing your data for knowledge management, how do you find the knowledge and prioritize it? And then how do you label it? Are you using taxonomies? Or how do you get an enterprise to really globally view their data as one and plug it in a way that you can actually use?
Okay, so just to make sure I have your question right, I think I heard the second question, which is how do you combine these data sources and then mine it to draw out the information? Then what was the first one?
And then how do you, especially when you're consulting with a customer, how do you identify the knowledge that the employees need? And how do you coach your customers to get them to find the right information to build your knowledge management?
Yeah, so when it comes to identifying the customer's problem, coming from my background as a product manager, you know, before I build any algorithms or any models, I have to think about, like, okay, how is this going to be used and what's the problem I'm trying to be solved? You know, is it a loan officer and they're trying to look at a specific system? Is it an HR team using Workday and we're trying to get data from those data sources? So you have to identify the data sources based on the customer problem. And, you know, that's, I think there are many ways to go around it, but usually our customer success team or our sales team goes out and does some problem identification to really identify the different use cases and personas that we would be serving. And then secondly, when it comes to combining data sources, depending, it could be like an application that we need to connect to. But basically, we draw that information and we put it in a knowledge base so that the information is usually stored in one centralized location. It gets a little trickier.
Yeah, but how do you, it's all in one single source. But then how do you, there has to be a unifying how do you unify it so that when you're getting data from marketing and then data from O&T, how do you, when it gets centralized, how do you connect those two data points?
Yeah, from an IBM perspective, we really have a process that does that. We use Agile, we use iterative. You get into that.
No, it's a long process to see where those different
like data feeds are coming from, that the data sources are coming from, and then you have to do the work. You have to get in there and do. So you're trying to figure out exactly what's the technical source to be able to get the taxonomy down, so you know exactly where it's coming from and how they can be merged. Yeah, I mean that really starts with whatever tool. Like for us, it's looking at the models themselves, and then we build those together. We use APIs. We use a variety of different technologies that'll pull those sources together and then unify them. Because that's really critical. If you don't have that, we just talked about it, garbage in, garbage out. If you don't have the right kind of data sources pulled together, you're not going to have the right result or outcome. Mm-hmm.
We have several different models. Like you said, there's marketing and all these different departments. So we have document mining, and we also have models that will check for example, conflicting information between departments or different documents.
Yeah.
And so it's a multi-step process, and we've got models that I won't go too much into. Happy to chat with you later. Some of the NLP. Yeah.
Get Julie's card.
NLP.
Yes.
That goes into it.
She's boiling the ocean.
Yeah. No, that's a great question.
Good question. We have time for maybe one more. Yes.
I just have a comment. First of all, I just want to thank you for all the information. And I appreciate that you mentioned the diversity as a women in technology organization. The importance, what I've heard recently, is that we have to continue to encourage our young women to get into the field and the industry to help with those decision-making, machine learning, behavior, human interaction. So I just wanted to point that out again. I have heard that a lot lately, and so I appreciate you bringing that up.
There's not enough women in technology.
We encourage it. We got a CEO that's a woman. Well, we have a CEO that's a woman. We encourage women to get into technology. We want you there.
Well, since that was quick, maybe we have time for one more. Yes. Oh, it looks like we have one up here. Go ahead.
Kind of basing a previous conversation about garbage in and garbage out and kind of feeding off her question, the importance of data management, that is probably the key to, and there's an IBM white paper from probably 8 years ago about data management and data governance. I think that's kind of critical. Is the basis of all having organizational structure and the standards and governance about that. So, kind of a comment, kind of a question too. How do you guys handle that, or what is your recommendation?
Well, you know, we continue to build off that kind of governance model. Data is critical. We have data science type practice that goes in and evaluates the data using all sorts of data tools that we've built through the years. If you don't have the correct data, you're not going to get the outcomes you want.
I'm not sure. We have to be very, very careful as far as, you know, because we have a lot of data and we have a lot of private information data. So we have a whole data governance team that does nothing but oversee and govern the data that we have to make sure that people are following the right policies, the right procedures, make sure people don't have wrong accesses. So we have a huge focus on that. We have a whole team just dedicated to governing just the data.
And from a customer experience perspective, you know, you need to make sure it's not creepy. right? I mean, you
know. You mean stalking's not allowed? You can't stalk
somebody? I mean, it's, you know, I mean, the technology is there to know that you're in the store, like if you're a retailer, right? And
right.
I think, you know, and I think you have to go at the pace that customers want to adopt that and allow permission-based. So we could probably have a whole other podcast just on data security. It was really important to make sure that you understand sort of how you're using that data and don't say, oh, hi, it looks like we know three people in common at Facebook. I mean, that kind of stuff is not, you know,
locally.
Even though you know that,
yeah.
you need to make sure that the data is being used appropriately.
Right.
And one last
right.
thing about IBM, we're looking at a way that you can actually control your data. No longer you have to get permission to MasterCard to actually access it. So that's a practice we're building out right
okay.
now.
Interesting. Elizabeth, did you have a question?
I have one last comment.
Or comment?
It kind of builds on something you just said back here about encouraging young women to get in.
Oh, yeah.
I'd encourage all women at every age and at every stage.
Yes. It doesn't have to be young, right?
Amen.
Because I, agree. You know, I find new things every single day at the top of the organization that I knew nothing about yesterday or 2 weeks ago.
Sure.
And,
well, 52 is young.
That foundational idea is curiosity.
Yes,
and how do we
it
apply
is.
It to solve business solutions and then embrace everybody around you who knows how to do that or has ideas about how to do that?
Well, I'll piggyback on that. In the financial industry, who spends most of the money?
Females. All of it.
Yes.
And so, so
and they're not young, no, they do. I'm just kidding.
So one of the things we've done at MasterCard, we've established some business resource groups. And we have one dedicated to women in the industry. And just the ideas that we generate from a spending behavior generates innovation, it's a curiosity, and it kind of brings new ideas to play. So, I mean, I strongly, yeah, absolutely. And yeah.
And listen, you need more righteous brothers doing the work on this side.
You're right, everybody.
All right.
Everybody needs to be included.
Women are there. I mean, at MasterCard, we're a tech company. There's so many women.
That's great.
The problem is the skills that are valued the most. Happen to be skills men mostly have. So it's how do we reframe and start looking at the skills that women have as being just as valuable as the skills that men have.
It's up to you to do that, but then you have to build your peer group, like-minded people that want to do the same thing. It's up to you to decide, okay, I'm going to make this difference. I'm going to show my ambition and drive and curiosity to equal whatever's happening at the top, and then build your base like right now. You're doing at this meeting with other women to make a difference.
Mm-hmm. Julie, successful. You have something to say. I can see something percolating
yeah,
there.
Yeah, I think it's a little more nuanced. Like, I think that a lot of the opportunities I've had in my career are, yes, due to my own initiative, but also because of my supporters, many of whom were male, both male and female.
Yes.
And it's like, you know, my dream, sometimes I can dream about reaching a certain position because I see someone like me or who looks like me. But not only that, but also that people who don't look like me are supportive of my ambitions.
Right.
So I think it's like a multifaceted, like, there's not one solution to this. It starts like, you know, working with Create a Loop, teaching children computer science. Like, it starts that young, like when you're under 10 years old. It starts that young about inspiring children of all races and genders, you know, that this is a cool career path to pursue. Exactly.
And we didn't even get into that, but like, yeah, I mean, you do.
It's like
you
every
teach
stage
young girls,
of your life.
Right, with like, Create a Loop.
When I get into college, I see 50-50 intro to computer science. And then, you know, by the end of 4 years, it's like, you know, then there's like two women in the really advanced computer science.
This needs to be another podcast.
It's like, yeah, it's a whole other subject.
Seriously, this does. Like, this needs to be another one.
We'll
do another one. All right. Well, guys, thank you so much. And these guys will probably stick around for a few minutes, right?
Definitely.
So if anybody wants to.
Thank you.
Our show today is executive produced by Brian Muncy. Our technical producer is Daniel Williams. Something Extra with Lisa Nichols is a Technology Partners production. Copyright Technology Partners, Inc. 2019. For show notes or to reach out to Lisa, visit tpi.co/podcast. Don't forget to leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or wherever you listen.